This is the EMDocs.net podcast with Britt Long and Manny Singh. We bring you high-yield content about what you're seeing every day in the ED. Your next patient is a 45-year-old female who's brought in by EMS. She's had 3 days of progressively worsening headache, confusion, and vision changes. EMS states that while they were transporting the patient, they noticed a 30-second generalized tonic-clonic seizure that resolved with 2 milligrams of lorazepam. There's been no recent trauma, toxic exposure, or even infectious symptoms. The patient also has no known history of mental illness. However, she does have lupus with lupus nephritis and hypertension. On your exam, you find a blood pressure of 190 over 105, and she's awake but confused. You detect no evidence of external trauma, and her cardiovascular and pulmonary exams are normal. Visual fields are difficult to fully assess, but the patient does appear to have some degree of global visual impairment. Cranial nerves are intact, and she's able to move all extremities on command with intact strength. Your EKG is also normal, as is a glucose. CT of the head without contrast reveals hypoattenuation in the subcortical white matter of the parietal and occipital lobes. Today we're talking about PRESS. This is posterior reversible encephalopathy syndrome. It's also known as RIPPLES, or reversible posterior leukoencephalopathy syndrome. This is a clinical and radiologic disorder defined by acute onset of neurologic symptoms and basilogenic edema on neuroimaging. PRESS has been described in adults and kids with ages ranging from 2 to even 90 years of age. It is more common in women and individuals in their 40s. It is difficult to determine the exact incidence of PRESS because there's really no standardized diagnostic criteria. It really came to our attention in 1996 with a case series of 15 patients who presented with headache, seizure, visual problems, and altered mental status. These patients had posterior subcortical edema on CT or MRI. Since that time, because we have more access to MRI and definitive imaging, there's been an increased recognition of PRESS. PRESS is most commonly associated with hypertension, and it's usually severe and uncontrolled. It's also associated with preeclampsia and eclampsia, immunosuppressive and cytotoxic medications, renal disease, malignancy, organ transplant, autoimmune disease, and substance abuse disorders. All these conditions can directly cause PRESS. Approximately half to even 90% of patients will have some underlying diagnosis of hypertension. Autoimmune disorders like lupus, TTP, polyarteritis nodosa, and cryoglobulinemia make up another 45% of cases. I had mentioned those medications earlier. Cyclosporin, tacrolimus, cisplatin, and steroids are often cited and associated with the disease, but PRESS can even occur with therapeutic levels of immunosuppressive medications. In organ transplant patients, PRESS can occur in up to 6% and even 8% of those with bone marrow transplant. The other big population to think about this in is eclampsia. The prevalence of PRESS has been reported to be anywhere between 65 to 100% of patients and almost 20% of patients with preeclampsia and neurologic symptoms. When it comes to the pathophysiology, it's not completely understood. The most commonly accepted theory involves the failure of cerebral autoregulation when that upper limit of blood pressure is rapidly exceeded. This leads to hyperperfusion, vascular leak, and then vasogenic edema. This most commonly occurs in those arterial border zones in the posterior circulation where there's decreased sympathetic innervation. The subcortical white matter is the most commonly affected area. A second theory involves endothelial dysfunction where circulating toxins, maybe secondary to sepsis or cytotoxic therapies, damage the vascular endothelium. This results in vascular leak and, again, vasogenic edema. You need to obtain a thorough medical history, review of systems, and physical exam if you can, but unfortunately, this can be limited because many of these patients will have altered mental status. If you can, obtain information from family members or caretakers. The most common presenting signs and symptoms include seizures, encephalopathy with altered mental status, headaches, and visual disturbances. Encephalopathy can range from mild confusion to lethargy or coma. This will occur in about 50 to 80% of patients. Seizures can occur in 60 to 75% of cases and can be complicated by status epilepticus. Seizures are typically generalized tonic-clonic, but they might be partial. The headache associated with PRESS is usually global and poorly responsive to analgesics, but they're not typically sudden or maximal onset like that patient with subarachnoid hemorrhage. Visual disturbances occur in 1 to 2-thirds of patients and are usually due to involvement of the occipital lobes. you might find decreased visual acuity, visual field deficits, and cortical blindness. The onset of symptoms typically occurs over hours to days, and blood pressure in the acute setting with PRESS is usually elevated compared with patient baseline pressures, especially in kids. Those with chronic hypertension more frequently demonstrate severe and rapid increases in their blood pressures. Now, while I mentioned that most patients are going to have an elevated blood pressure, about 20% of patients will have normal blood pressures at presentation, so this is one of the pitfalls. Focal neurologic deficits like limb weakness can occur in 10 to 15% of cases, and this is another problem. With these signs and symptoms in the setting of hypertension, the presentation of PRESS can mimic acute stroke, especially if that patient presents with focal deficits. Differentiating PRESS from ischemic stroke, especially in the setting of a normal head CT, is really difficult, and it typically requires MRI for diagnosis. Permissive hypertension during presumed stroke management can be harmful in the setting of PRESS because we want to reduce blood pressures in the patient with PRESS. The key takeaway here is that if a patient presents with headache, seizure, vision changes, and altered mental status, you need to think about PRESS. These are less common in patients with stroke. In stroke, you're looking for those focal neurologic deficits. When it comes to diagnosis, PRESS needs to be considered a clinical and radiologic diagnosis, but we need to evaluate for other serious diagnoses. Lab tests can help us look for other causes of toxic metabolic encephalopathy, things like uremia, liver failure, electrolyte abnormalities, and even infection. An LPE may reveal elevated protein levels, but no pleocytosis. This elevated CSF protein level is also correlated with the extent of vasogenic edema. An elevated white blood cell count in the CSF is not typically present in PRESS and should make you think about other conditions, things like meningitis and encephalitis. Like I mentioned, imaging is really the key component of diagnosis. In patients with altered mental status, focal neurologic deficits, or seizures, non-contrast head CT is typically the first imaging modality we're going to obtain in the ED. You might find bihemispheric vasogenic edema on this imaging test. The non-contrast head CT is also necessary to exclude cerebral hemorrhage or mass. Unfortunately, these findings won't always be present. Case series have reported normal or non-specific findings on initial head CT in over half of patients diagnosed with PRESS on subsequent MRI. MRI is more sensitive for your diagnosis. CT perfusion can be helpful, but the characteristic findings are controversial. MRI is really your go-to imaging modality, which might not be obtainable in the ED setting. The most common findings on MRI are hyperintense T2 or flare signal imaging, demonstrating areas of vasogenic edema. Diffusion-weighted imaging can also help you differentiate vasogenic from cytotoxic edema, which is present in stroke. The most common location of lesions is a subcortical white matter in the parieto-occipital region, with about 50 to even 98% of patients having some involvement in this region. While posterior is in the name of PRESS, other areas can be involved, including the frontal lobe, temporal lobe, basal ganglia, cerebellum, and even the brainstem. Lesions are typically bihemispheric, but they can be asymmetrical, and the degree of edema on imaging doesn't necessarily correlate with the clinical presentation. While these patients are admitted, they'll typically receive repeat MRI evaluations. If you work in a center that doesn't have MRI capabilities and that patient has a focal neurologic deficit, like limb weakness or vision changes, and they're hypertensive, you need to think about stroke. Speak with your neurology consultant, and they might need thrombolytic therapy if the patient doesn't have contraindications to therapy. If there's no focal deficit present and the patient presents with seizures or acute hypertension, then you should think about PRESS. For your management, there's really no RCT data or established clinical practice guidelines. Management should focus on treating any underlying etiology, managing the hypertension, and treating seizures if they're present. If a medication is thought to contribute to the development of PRESS, the medication needs to be reduced, held, or discontinued, but you should discuss this with the prescribing specialist or the person who's going to be admitting the patient. If the patient is seizing, stop the seizure with benzodiazepines. If the patient is pregnant or in a postpartum state, then they'll need magnesium. For blood pressure, there's no consensus on goal blood pressure in patients with PRESS, though you'll need to promptly control it if the patient is hypertensive. In ischemic stroke, aggressive blood pressure lowering may lead to worse outcomes, but this has not been described in PRESS. A mean arterial pressure reduction by no more than 25% over the first hour is recommended. Further decreases are not recommended because this is going to reduce cerebral perfusion. Medications like nicardipine, clavulanate, labetalol, or esmolol are probably your best bets. Nicardipine is more effective than labetalol at reaching a goal blood pressure in the overall management of acute hypertension, and it's also less likely to cause bradycardia. Stay away from nitroglycerin and nitroprusside. These can lead to cerebral vasodilation and elevation in ICP. If the patient's pregnant, you can still use nicardipine, clavulanate, or esmolol. These are all category C. Treatment of vasogenic edema due to press with steroids is not recommended. The initiation of steroid therapy in patients with underlying autoimmune or inflammatory disorders has been associated with the development of press. So basically, don't use steroids to treat the vasogenic edema. There are some complications associated with press. One of them is intracranial hemorrhage, which can occur in up to 25% of patients, with death occurring in up to 6% of patients. Ischemic stroke may also occur due to acute vasoconstriction. Unfortunately, persistent neurologic symptoms can be present in 10 to 20% of cases of press and can include things like recurrent seizures, persistent hemiparesis or decreased visual acuity, or nonspecific symptoms like dizziness and headache. Press can recur in about 5 to 10% of cases and is most commonly going to occur in patients with uncontrolled hypertension. Because of how sick these patients are, their need for recurrent monitoring, and their need for IV antihypertensive treatment, they'll need to be admitted to an ICU. While most patients will fully recover with appropriate management, recovery can be delayed for hours after goal blood pressure targets are reached. Radiographic changes typically improve within several weeks. In summary, PRESS is a clinical and radiologic syndrome characterized by altered mental status, seizures, visual disturbances, and headache. It's been associated with risk factors like hypertension, renal disease, autoimmune disease, immunosuppressant medications, and eclampsia. Diagnosis is confirmed on neuroimaging, with MRI the most sensitive modality. You might find vasogenic edema on non-contrast head CT in the ED. Treatment focuses on seizure management, blood pressure control, and management of any underlying trigger. Prognosis is overall good, with most patients experiencing complete reversal of neurologic symptoms. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Stay safe and healthy, everyone.